deserve to be heard. You deserve to be seen. Your story matters, and so does your heart. You deserve to pour in.
Hello, loves. Welcome to this month's episode of Our Naked Truths, The Communion. Wherever you are, we invite you to join us. Perhaps pour yourself some tea. We're currently drinking our special OMT blend created to enhance relaxation, meditation and self-love by our trusted and loved sponsor, Mutulu Botanica. Check out their offerings on their website at www.mutulubotanica.com. Okay, let's go.
I vow to exist without fear, shame or guilt. Daring to love myself with nothing to prove. You're listening to Our Naked Truths, The Communion, sharing our stories of self-love and acceptance. So, be still, be present, and let's begin.
I am so excited because not only are we recording on a Friday, which is always a good day to record, it's the end of the week, but I am so excited to have and honoured to have the Maya Scarlett, dancer, self-taught, differently abled, badass designer from the gods. Hi, Maya!
I love that intro so much. I'm going to change my bio.
You're just a phenomenal human. So it's an honor to have you here, love. An absolute honor.
Thank you.
So, babe, how's your heart? How's your heart today?
A bit all over the place. Yeah. Especially in the current climate of the world as well. I would be surprised if it wasn't that way.
There's a lot going on right now. You know, not only are we dealing with the collective trauma and transition and changes that Corona and COVID-19 has presented itself, and the isolation and the freedom of movement being taken away from us during quarantine. You know, even though it's been a mix of emotions and feelings, you know, actually taking into account the loss of Black and Brown lives due to this strange but deadly virus. Powerful shift is happening. The ancestors know exactly what they're doing. But shout out to everyone, every Black and Brown person who is listening to this podcast. We love you. We hear you. We see you. We are with you, you know. So, babes, Madame Maya. So, last year, almost to the month, you know, it's mad how this happened. We always end up doing that with our muses when they come back to share their story. It just kind of coincides with almost a year to the day that they modeled with. You bravely and gracefully shared your body and story with us for your session, which was The Rebirth Will Be Visible. That was a powerful session. There were tears shed. We laughed loads. We had Deji Tiwo, big up Deji, I love her, man, who came and created like a beautiful dance performance art piece that had all of us clutching our hearts. It was, I think we all did. It was just so moving and so honest. And it was so beautiful to see her Black body just gracefully dancing in that space, so free, so vulnerable. Magical to witness, ma'am. So I always say this, but actually all sessions sit deeply with me. They all sit and they have a piece of my heart. And I definitely remember your session. It was a very powerful session. So how was your Our Naked Truth experience?
I don't even know if I have the words to which is funny because I feel like I'm actually a talker. I talk a lot. I feel like I felt every emotion within the 4-hour session. There was enough time to feel a lot of things. Especially like, it's weird, derobing was actually the easiest part for me. But then there's always there's also this running joke that I don't actually ever wear clothes in life. So I think what I found the hardest, but the most difficult part of the session was probably sitting down and then actually talking. I feel like movement, or sometimes just being still, is kind of like an easy cop out for me because I don't have to actually get deep or, you know, below surface area and really talk about what's going on in my head. And I used to think that I was a very, a very open person. But especially in that session, it just made me realize how closed off I am. I think people are able to mask like having energy or being social, being an extrovert as openness. That's not necessarily it. I feel like I am that. And if I'm in a social setting or around people, I can talk and I can laugh and joke. But just exposing all my secrets and my feelings and stuff like that is a very hard thing to navigate. So I'm really happy that I did the session. And that was a milestone for me as well, because just speaking about my life or the things that I find difficult isn't really a common thing that I do. I think people just assume I get on with stuff, and I've been raised to just power through, which is a good thing. It's also a bad thing, but kind of put on a brave face, because sometimes it's just the easiest way to navigate a lot of things. So yeah, I feel like getting naked was easy. I love that, you know, but talking, it was probably the most difficult bit for me.
But you did it.
Yeah,
you know, like it might have been very scary, and it might have felt quite unnatural, but the sheer confidence, honesty, vulnerability, and richness that you brought to that conversation in unearthing your experience and sharing that with everybody, I think was felt by everybody in the room. You know, I think it was definitely an example of feeling the fear and doing it anyway. And you fully came with your whole self. So that's something to not discredit or to not acknowledge. It's really important to acknowledge that. It's not an easy process to share your body and share your story. And some of us are quite liberal with our bodies and okay with sharing our bodies, but to share the story behind the body and to share the experience behind the body, sometimes for a lot of people is the worst part, is the most difficult part. But the fact that people are trusting the space enough to do it and feeling safe enough to do it, that's where the real work and the real magic happens. And so I'm so grateful that you came and trusted us, you know, with your precious, wonderful self. So what came up for you post-session?
I think initially it was a really nice but unfamiliar experience. Like, I'm not used to seeing myself in illustration or in drawings, especially my hands and my feet. I'm used to seeing the standard body of like 10 fingers and toes, you know. So it's weird. It was really nice, but it was kind of strange looking at my body from someone else's perspective. And also just because that's not really a thing that I think about all the time or 24/7. Like, I'm aware of it in moments that will remind me, but I don't wake up and think, oh yeah, I have a disability. Yeah, it's just been like, okay, we'll adapt, and then I get on with it. And even when I'm adapting, I'm not thinking, oh, I'm adapting because of the disability I have. I'm like, I'm adapting because that's what humans do, right?
Your condition wasn't something that you felt kind of limited you. If anything, it just meant that you needed to adapt. And that, what came up for me when you said that, was the thought of the social model of disability, and where that came from, where a group of differently abled people came together and actually created this model, because they felt that disability was actually coined by people to exclude them. And so the social model model of disability was all around inclusion, all around making things accessible, and all around kind of changing the way that we view differently abled people from being different, but actually just being another facet of humanity. And so a lot of laws were born off the back of that. Shout out to that group, you know, big up you lot for kind of using your voice, you know, using your voice and your experience to create change. And it's funny, as we talk about that, that was in the 80s.
Yeah.
I think that now, you know, in 2020, you are still like, your way of navigating the world is just adapting.
I feel like now the world has to adapt to coronavirus. And I'm just sitting here thinking, what do you think people with disabilities have been doing since morning? Like, that's all we know. And now everyone's in a frenzy and a panic because now workplaces are now being forced to like implement these things that they were never really trying to do for disabled people in the first place. So as much as it sucks, it's also just really funny to watch people like run around and try and figure out ideas when they've probably had employees that have been giving it to them on a plate and they just didn't want to hear it. So I was born with etrodactyly. So I have three digits on my left hand, two on my right, and then I have two toes on each foot. I'm here trying to do the math in my head, like, is that right? Yeah. I forget. I have staring at my hands every day and my feet to even remember sometimes. I had it from birth, so it's not like growing up, it's not the same as being an amputee. So having your like arm or maybe some of your fingers surgically removed halfway through life. So I've kind of just navigated everything the same way as everyone else, but just in my own version.
And so like I think it's really interesting, your intersections are really interesting, to live with etrodactyly, to be a Black woman, and then to also be queer. How do you think your intersections informed your journey of self-acceptance?
It's really funny because I was actually talking to one of my friends this morning and yesterday, actually, my friend Kaylee, who's an amazing designer, because we love to shout out designers. Her brand's Giselle, you know, find her on Instagram. We were talking about Black-owned brands and the association of being Black-owned, and we were kind of just getting into a deep conversation about it. And I think for me, being Black and then being queer and then being disabled, I don't think I've ever labelled myself out loud. I'm so used to getting on with things that I don't think I'm rejecting who I am, but it's just almost the notion of I just want to get on with my stuff and I want to exist without people asking me like, what am I, or who am I, or what do I have, or who am I, or who do I associate myself with? Like, I've never really had that. And especially being, I guess, differently abled passing, I've never really had to think about labeling myself anything. So I think I sometimes struggle with that once people discover it, especially with my disability as well. It's almost like, I don't know whether you appreciate my work or you think I'm talented, or is it because you're tokenizing me because I have a disability? Oh, and it's a Black-owned business, right? You know, it's not necessarily me not being proud of who I am. I'm very proud of who I am, but growing up constantly being labeled as like the disabled kid is quite taxing, and it's something that I didn't actually come to terms with up until, I don't know, maybe a year ago actually.
We're about to play Maya's Love Note. This is a section that I really look forward to in the podcast, where we invite our guests to share a love note to self. This was a really powerful one because it wasn't just for Maya, it was for all of us.
It's an unprecedented and tedious time right now in the world. It feels like we're constantly in a grey area where old routines are dying and a new normal is forming. It can be pretty overwhelming, and the light at the end of the tunnel seems so far away. It's more important now than ever that we create and spread joy where we can, whether it's through family, friends, creating, or even simple things like going for a walk. Take it one day at a time. Negative feelings may feel present and really intense right now, but it's easy to fear the unknown. But with these things, they won't last forever. This too shall pass.
Oh. I felt like I could breathe easy as I was that. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Why did you choose that for your love note? What inspired that?
Yeah, I've just been feeling so many emotions. And I've been talking to a lot of my best friends, or like even my mum, and it's kind of crazy because I feel like talking to the older generation, you just realize that there's cycles of these, but obviously because they're older and they've been here way longer than we have, we're almost sitting here like, oh my god, the world feels so chaotic, like what's going on? Yeah, there's so many things in our face right now, and like a lot of us probably haven't experienced it. Everyone that's under the age of 30, we're probably so confused, and we're all just trying to figure out how to feel these emotions. Whereas I'm talking to my mom, I'm talking to my aunts, and they're just like, yeah, same stuff, different day, do you know what I mean? But they've seen these things happen even at the same age that I am now. My mom was just telling me about things like police brutality, and my uncles have gone through it, and just certain family members have even experienced it, especially the guys in my family. I've just been feeling a lot of emotions and sort of shedding sort of habits that I had, or thoughts that I have, or beliefs, and even just navigating through friendships and having to also stay educated online and then not spiral out of control from seeing, because it's a really traumatic time for everyone because we're all stuck at home, but especially for Black people with what's going on right now. We're all collectively mourning, so it was almost just like a note to self of just like, okay, take it one day at a time. I don't know, life's not linear either. Life is just full of ups and downs.
Yeah.
And I've learned that from the first time I really mourned from someone in my family. That was the first time I kind of really sat down and actually spoke about death and got familiar with it. So I think this is just one of those moments where I'm just trying to get through each day as it comes. Yeah, so just after, I did an interview with Metro, and I got asked just a few questions, just like for calling out Apple, apparently, because their settings weren't friendly for like people with 2 and 3 fingers, but I don't think they would really assume anyone would have that, or also very black and white, like you've got a wheelchair, or you know, a leg amputee, but no one ever walks down the road and goes, oh yeah, that person has ectrodactyly. Like a lot of people don't even know what it is. And even from when I was born, it was still a very new disability to a lot of people. So that's why I've just had to get on with things, I guess. I'm kind of grateful for that, because then I've never had to feel like I can't do things. I just adapt in my own way. But I think it kind of blocks me sometimes when people throw all my labels at me. I sometimes feel like it limits me as a person. I'd rather you appreciate my greatness and then be like, oh, and on top of that, okay, go off, you know? And even reading the article, the first line was something like, girl with lobster claw syndrome. And I read it and I was just like, ah, you know what? I never walk into a house party or a job interview and they're like, hey, what's your name? Like, tell us a little bit about yourself, and I'm like, well, I'm Maya and I have lobster claw syndrome, and you know, it's not really my opening catchphrase or punchline. Yeah, I just think sometimes it takes away me just being able to exist in a space as a person.
Absolutely. And it's about being able to do our humanity first, really. But the world doesn't look like that. I didn't really like I liked the article. I liked the showcase of your work. I liked seeing your beautiful face. I think you were wearing like a yellow or like an orange or a gold outfit that you had made, which was beautiful. And then there were some of like pictures of your humour. But like you took a, that really is like this awkward, can you take a picture of your hands? I could just imagine the brief.
At the time, I was so happy to do it because I was like, yeah, let's shine a light. But then there was also an issue of the girl that was writing it was a POC, and then the guy writing it was the guy above her was white. So he looked over my article and basically just tweaked things without actually understanding or taking in what my culture is. So I'm from the Caribbean. So instead of Notting Hill Carnival, he changed it to Nottingham, and he changed a few other things. And she kind of had to apologize on his behalf. And it's just like, I wrote these things because I thought they were so important, and someone to just take it upon themselves to not even, you know, really research things or kind of make things sound a bit more of a sob story than they needed to be. And I appreciate that she voiced it in the end and told me that. But I think it also showed me that as much as I wanted to sprinkle my voice out into the world and put myself out there, I can also do that myself on my own terms, or maybe research into platforms a bit more and ones that won't try and silence me, even if it's not subconscious that they're doing it.
Thank you for sharing that. I think what I'm getting from that is that you have always had an innate sense of self-worth and self-belief. And I love the fact that actually your intersections have not led your life. You believe that you are the driver of your life. Yes, there will be things to navigate in the outside world, but you haven't allowed that to affect or to stop you from doing what you need to do and to put your purpose into the world, which I think is magnificent, something that we can all learn from, you know. In terms of your theme for the sessions, the theme, the rebirth will be visible, it's quite poignant for you then. Do you think it still applies?
I'm only starting to figure out who I am as a person now. And also it's a constant journey because there's a lot of things that I've kind of had to unpack, or that was an underlying issue that I wasn't aware of. I also just think that's the rule of thumb for life, is that you're constantly having to face up to things that you didn't in the past. And then especially now with being stuck at home with coronavirus and everything, and just figuring out like where I want to take my career, or the things that were bothering me, now is the time to kind of just sit with myself and unpack a few things. Whereas before I had so many distractions, or I'd be like, oh, I don't have the time, there's not enough time in the day. Whereas now it's like, girl, where are you going other than your house? Like, you have anywhere to go to. We're gonna deal with this now, you know. So I don't know, I felt very scattered, but I feel like scattered is what I need to be right now.
Thank you. Thanks so much for that. When would you say, or when do you feel the most accepting of yourself?
I think when I mess up, or when I make mistakes, which sounds very weird. I think I used to be very scared of just failing or not getting things right, and I don't know about everyone else, but especially for myself, like if I'm doing something, I have to be a professional, or I have to be 10 steps ahead, when in reality, like, if you don't try, then you won't know. And from making a lot of mistakes, whether that's in work or even just like designing, or even with friends and family and loved ones, I've learned so much from messing up. I was trying to not swear, but yeah, just from making mistakes, I think. Yeah, I've learned so much, and I think that's when I'm most accepting of myself as well. I'm just reminding myself that as humans, we're going to constantly evolve and we're constantly making mistakes and learning. And also, if you don't make mistakes, you don't really grow as a person. And it's funny, now I can sit and think back to all of the steps that I've taken to like where I want to be with design, or even just with friends and family, or even being a bit more outspoken as a person. Because 3 years ago, if you asked me to do the life drawing, I would have been like, I'm okay, you know. But it was the right time. I needed to do it at that point. It didn't need to happen 3 years ago. And then just also not rushing things as well, because I feel like we all want the end result. No one really likes to enjoy the journey of things. Every time I talk to you, I feel like I'm in the best therapy session of my life. I'm like, wow, I'm gonna walk off and cry after this. This is great. I love it.
Thank you. I received your words. That was really kind. I think there's a lot to be said for being in communion with people, with community, that feels cathartic and feels therapeutic. And that's one of the reasons why we called this podcast The Communion. We're inviting people to take part in a cathartic collective healing conversation about our journeys and our experiences and our triumphs and our evolution. That's always therapy, and it's definitely therapy for me. You know, every conversation I have with this podcast is therapeutic. I love doing them, so I get to learn from you amazing humans and take part. What was your first lesson in self-love?
I think my first lesson in self-love was probably just not putting myself against others, and also not measuring it by the society that we're in. I don't know when I learned this, but just knowing that the world wasn't built for me as a Black woman. Yeah. Knowing that I'd have to fight for a lot of the things that I want, and with all the odds sort of stacked up against me, I know that I have to work twice as hard. And I'm returning back to the same point of always just wanting to get to the end rather than going through the journey and like feeling the growing pains and messing up a lot. And I never really wanted to do that. And I don't know where I heard that line from of the world not being built for you. Maybe it was my mum, or maybe it was my dad. That sentence made everything click for me. And I think once I realized that, I kind of just obviously had to navigate things in my own way, but it makes me aware that anything that I want, it's not going to be an overnight process.
For this month's gentle reminder, we want to invite you to remind yourself that you deserve to be heard. You deserve to be seen. Your story matters, and so does your heart. You deserve to pour in. With everything that's happening with our current climate of race relations, the collective trauma that's here, and the awareness, the collective awareness and activism and light that's being shone on the Black experience, it's a lot. It is a lot. And if now more than ever, it's so important to practice self-compassion. So spend time tending to where you hold tension and focusing on releasing it. And do not be afraid to feel joy during this time. To our Black and POC family, please don't be afraid to show your joy. You deserve to honor your heart in this way. You deserve to release, so do so. It's okay to celebrate yourself and your Blackness. Actually, it's an act of self-love and activism. Right, we are now going to move to a question from the community. So one of our members of the community, the Our Naked Truths community, Jordan, has sent a question for you. And the question is, how do you maintain a sense of balance between your work, your creative passions, your relationships, having a really interesting and bubbling platform in terms of your digital presence during these uncertain times?
I think for the first few weeks of coronavirus up until now, I think I've been pretty silent online, but just because of my own history of mental health. I think obviously like knowledge is power, but then there's a lot of conspiracy theories online and there's a lot of graphic images and there's numbers and statistics. And it's like, I'm feeding all of this, but then I'm feeling really crap or I'm feeling tired or I'm feeling drained. So for the most part of it, I've been pretty quiet online, and Instagram is a platform that I use to push my work. So I've been really silent, but in the moments that I'm silent, I've actually been working on myself a lot in terms of work anyway. And design is just something that I've been doing since I was little and it makes me happy. So it's my therapy, even if I do get money from it. It's my safe space. So I've been channeling a lot of my energy into that, which has been benefiting me a lot. And also it's my job as well. But I feel like as a whole, I've managed to balance everything a lot better than I thought I could. And maybe that's just from past trauma. And the only things I had to hold that against were really dark times. So I don't know, I'm surprising myself. I'm like, wow, girl, you haven't had a meltdown? What's going on? Like, yeah, I'm like, wow, meltdowns and crying. That's so on brand for me. Why is it not happening? But I think I underestimate myself. Yeah, especially now. And I don't want to paint the picture of, wow, I'm so strong. I'm stronger than I thought, because as Black women, that's all people know, is us to just push through things, and we're so strong where it's like, I crumble, I cry all the time, I love to cry.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and sometimes I just like to be still, and even with this quarantine and being lucky enough that I work remotely anyway, sometimes I've just given myself days to do nothing just because I need it. And then also not feeling pressurized to pick up a new skill and bang out like 10,000 hours of work, you know, or exhausting myself trying to obtain all these skills because it's performative. And what have you been doing with your quarantine time? And, you know, so I've just been listening to my body a lot more than I ever had. And maybe that's just because of past experiences that have sort of like brought me up to this moment. Feel like I've dealt with it a lot better than I thought I would.
Because you're a genie, that's why.
Right, for this month's ONT Loves, this goes out to the magnificent Kia Brown. Tia Brown is a journalist, a freelance writer, and an activist. She's written about living with cerebral palsy in Teen Vogue, Essence, Catapult, Glamour, Harper's Bazaar, and various other publications. She holds a bachelor's degree in journalism from the State University of New York, and where she currently lives with her family. Kia Brown's debut book is a story in and of itself. Aside from being born from cerebral palsy, she was also born a twin, just ahead of an able-bodied sister, Leah, who was often dubbed, you guessed it, the pretty one by classmates and potential suitors. Kia's reclaiming of the phrase came after reckoning with years of physical and emotional pain. Kia's reclaiming of the phrase came after reckoning with years of physical and emotional pain, insecurities, jealousy, reconciliation, and ultimately accepting her ridiculously talented hashtag disabled and cute existence. This hashtag has garnered the writer her first book deal. Big ups to you, Kia, and earned her a spot on 2018's The Root 100. She's a gift. She's so phenomenal. Her work is amazing and so important. Her book, The Pretty One, On Life, Pop Culture, Disability, and Other Reasons to Fall in Love with Her, is available on Amazon. I love her work. I love how radical and honest she is. She is incredibly beautiful. And what struck me was the fact that actually, we don't see many Black, differently abled people being represented in any forms of the arts or literature. And so I'm just so glad that she is standing up in her truth and in her power by sharing her work. And we wanted to share that with you also. Please dive into her work and share it. Representation matters. Powerful shift that's happening. The ancestors know exactly what they're doing. But shout out to everyone, every Black and brown person who is listening to this podcast. We love you. We hear you. We see you. We are with you, you know?
This is it.
It's been a lot, babe.
That was a word. That was a sermon. That was an absolute moment.